Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sake Revolution. This is America's first sake podcast, and I am your host, John Puma. You may know me from the Sake Notes or as the administrator over at the Internet Sake Discord. Over on this podcast, though, I am your old-fashioned sake nerd guy.
And I'm your host, Timothy Sullivan. I am a sake samurai, sake educator, as well as the founder of the Urban Sake website. And every week, John and I will be here tasting and chatting about all things sake and doing our best to make it fun and easy to understand.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Tim, yes. It is a pleasure to be back here recording with you once again, another week.
Yes.
Yeah. And now Tim, I don't know how to tell you this, but we're at episode 97 now. That's what we're doing. Oh my,
that sounds exciting.
Now we're creeping up.
Yeah.
Creeping up on big bad 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we should do something special. We'll have to see what happens with that.
Let's put our thinking caps on.
Yeah, we'll put our thinking caps on. But for the more immediate concern, what is this week's episode going to be about? What is episode 97 all about?
Well, I thought it might be fun to explore sake drinking vessels. Since we started this podcast, you and I have been drinking out of wine glasses for almost everything we've tried.
Yeah, wine glasses, the official sake drinking vessel of Sake Revolution. But there are many others.
The official glass of the revolution,
yeah,
is the white wine glass.
I love it.
But there are many different vessels or cups for drinking sake, and I thought it might be fun to try some of them and compare them to a wine glass. So a little short series of smackdowns between more traditional sake cups and our week in, week out wine glass. What do you think?
Wait. Is this a new series?
I didn't want to say it.
But I'm in. I'm sold. Let's do it.
Until we run out of sake cup styles, this is a new series.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So where are we starting with this?
We should start with the most traditional style of sake cup. And we are talking about the sakazuki.
The sakazuki. That's the... I'm not going to lie here, Tim. The first time I encountered one of these, I thought it was a saucer.
So, John, why don't you describe what a sakazuki looks like for our listeners?
It is a shallow, wide drinking vessel. And you know, joking aside, it does really remind one of a bit of a saucer. I don't know any other situations where I've seen cups that are this shallow. Do you?
No, it doesn't hold a lot.
but you know, the wider they are, you can still hold a lot.
That's
you
true.
You just need to be very patient about how wide it's going to be.
Yeah, so it kind of looks like a soy sauce plate, right?
That is an excellent descriptor.
Yeah, and it has a foot on it, so it's raised up about half an inch. So it's
About footed, half an inch.
Footed. The sakazuki that I brought today is about 3 inches across and 1 inch tall. Mm-hmm. And it is a shallow saucer.
Yeah, yeah.
And has a raised up on a little foot. And it can probably hold at most 1.5 ounces of sake. At the most, right?
At most. And it's getting to the edge there. So you have to be very careful when you get to that 1.5 ounce level. Is that a lacquer or?
Yes. It's the one I brought today is a lacquer. This one is made out of wood. So they carve it out of very thin wood and then they apply many layers of lacquer. And that ends up giving it a plasticky, very smooth and silky finish to it. And because it's made out of wood, it's even lighter than if it was solid plastic.
So yeah.
It's a very much lighter than you'd expect.
Nice.
And this is not an expensive one, but it is a real lacquer sakazuki. And I understand you brought one too, John. Why don't you describe yours?
I did. Mine was is actually a sake brand promotional item. Mine is a little bit deeper than yours, and it is made of ceramic. But by and large, they are very, very similar. I assume I'd be able to hold a little bit more sake in mine, and that being ceramic, it also probably weighs a bit more. Mm. And this is for actually a Tamagawa branded sakazuki. Do not remember where I came across it, but I'm pretty sure it was in Japan.
Okay. So yours is like a white ceramic with a logo at the bottom, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it does have the foot like yours does too.
Yep. So they're footed, shallow, very wide cups. And not all too practical.
No, not very.
So John, if you visited Japan, where would you most likely see one of these sakazuki cups?
This is for ceremony, my understanding is at least. So I've seen them for some ceremonies at festivals. I've seen them used for weddings, things like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They're ceremonial sake cups. And they're often used in Shinto ceremonies, like you said. The most common usage of them that I think you would see in Japan is at a Japanese wedding. There's a ceremony called San San Kudo. Have you ever heard of that?
San San Kudo. Kudo?
Yes.
San San Kudo. Is it meant to be like 3-3 something something?
It's 3-3-9 times.
3-3-9 times. Oh, ku. I think of like
yeah.
Ku.
Yeah, it's
but ku. Yeah, okay. San San Kudo. 3-3-9 times.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is part of a very traditional Japanese wedding ceremony. And let me describe really quickly what that's all about. So there's a stack of three sakazuki, one stacked on top of the other.
Oh.
And then the Shinto maiden is going to come out, and the bride and groom are there as well. And the first top cup is given to the groom. And then using three small pours, the Shinto maiden pours the sake into the first cup, and then using three small sips, the groom drinks sake out of the first cup, and then the cup is given to the bride, the same cup, and she drinks three sips out of the sake cup. And then they move to the middle cup, and then it's three sips for the groom, three sips for the bride, and then the bottom cup. Three sips for the groom, three sips for the bride. So it's three sips. And the reason three is so important is that it cannot be evenly divided. Yeah. So if the number three is a lucky number associated with weddings because it can't be split evenly. You know, they don't really take three sips each time. They kind of pretend to do two and then they take the real sip on the third one, but it's a symbolic three sips. And that's always using these sakazuki cups.
Right. Now, I have a question for you. Are these the same size as the one like that you have, for example, that holds the 1.5 ounce?
Well, they're graduated.
Oh, okay. Okay. So smaller, larger, larger?
Yeah. They get slowly larger.
Oh, that's cool.
They gradually get larger as you go down, and they kind of nest one on top of the other.
Nice. Oh,
now, the reason that this style is so good for ceremonies is because – you know, you are only taking a small symbolic sip of sake, so the volume is just right. And when you pick up one of these cups, it is not easy to move it around without spilling, right?
No, so it's not.
You have to hold it basically with two hands. And
you got to be very careful.
You have to focus on the sake. You have to concentrate on what you're doing. So it's ideal for those thoughtful ceremonial times when you are getting married. You better be paying attention.
I don't know, Tim. I mean, there's enough going on when you're getting married that you have to, you're already juggling 50 different things. You're nervous. You're really, you know, you might've had a drink or two already, just kind of calm your nerves a little bit. And on top of that, you've got to balance this very tiny glass. It's very like almost like a saucer.
Yeah. Oof.
It's a whole new level of concern.
Yeah. So John, I have to tell you about one other ceremony that uses these sakazuki cups.
I'm ready.
So when you have the marriage, the bride is becoming a part of the groom's family. So it's a way to join the family. So the bride is kind of being adopted into the groom's family.
Uh-huh.
So there's a connection between like this exchange of sipping from the cup and family adoption. So there's a similar ceremony that is done in the Yakuza as well. So if you...
So the family.
Yeah, the family.
Oh.
So if you are joining the Yakuza and you're pledging your allegiance to a particular crime family house, to join, you actually sit with the boss and you do a ceremony where you sip out of the same cup. And then the person joining wraps up the cup at the end and puts it in his pocket as a forever reminder of his commitment. So it's a marriage ceremony in a way, but it's more like joining, being adopted into the crime family by sipping out of a sakazuki. So it's you don't see that very often.
No, but I don't think I do. And it's funny, I was just talking about the pressure on the bride and the groom during the marriage ceremony. I'm going to imagine for a moment that maybe that pales in comparison to the stress going on for your Yakuza family adoption. I generally speaking, I think you get to keep your fingers if at the wedding ceremony you spill a little sake.
Yeah. So definitely stressful. But I think that gives a little bit of historical and cultural context to this particular cup. And if you want to see a video of the wedding ceremony, you can check out our show notes at sakerevolution.com, and we'll have a YouTube video embedded there where you can see this three sips nine times situation going on.
Mm-hmm. And you can follow along at home having three sips nine times as well. We recommend you take a sip every time, though.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the materials used to make these sakazuki. So I mentioned Mine was lacquer. Yours was ceramic or porcelain, right?
Yeah. Yeah, porcelain. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous. Yours looks extremely fancy, very nice. It looks,
yeah.
It has a lot of chutzpah to it.
Yeah.
Japanese lacquer is something else. It's like really impressive stuff.
They also make them out of metals. So you can get it with silver or tin or gold-plated silver.
Uh-huh.
So you often see them. And they sell them in sets of three sometimes, just like that you would need
to keep that three ceremony. Got it. That's cool.
Sometimes graduated stacks, or you can buy them individually. And if you go to Japan and you visit an antique shop, you'll often find a lot of these because they're not used for daily use, but they're really great to have.
And I wonder if they are left over from the weddings, or if they are left over from the Yakuza guys who had to keep them for the rest of their lives. And, you know.
Yeah.
So I believe we're also going to be sipping some sake out of both this vessel and our traditional wine glass today.
Yes.
Doing a little compare and contrast about what qualities it brings out of the sake.
Right.
So with that, maybe we start talking about our sake this week.
Sure. Well, we wanted to pick something that was billed as having a little bit of fragrance to it because we want to explore how you perceive the fragrance in a more open cup versus a standard wine glass. So I'm really curious to taste the same sake from two different vessels. Definitely. So John, why don't you tell us what sake we've got today?
Yes, of course. Today we have the Matsu no Midori. That is from Yamamoto Honkei in Kyoto. And this is a Junmai Daiginjo. And the Seimai Bowai, the rice milling, is at 50%. And the rice that's being milled is Hatan Shiki, which I believe we have talked about in the past when going over discussing Hiroshima. And the sake meter value, that Nihonshudo, the measurement of potentially dry to sweet, is +5. Oh, and the alcohol percentage is 15.8. That is very specific.
Yes.
Sometimes we get like a range and like 15.8. No, it's exactly this.
Yep. That's what the bottle says. And this is billed as a fragrant type of sake. And the Yamamoto Honkei Brewery in Kyoto was established in 1677. So Ooh. Another brewery that's older than our country. Yet another.
Yeah, you know.
All right. So it's easy to pour sake from a bottle into the wine glass, but pouring sake into a sakazuki cup, very shallow, again, we're only going to get about an ounce of sake in here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pour my sake from the bottle into a small carafe, and then I'm going to use that to pour into the sakazuki because you need a lot more control. So let's go ahead and get this first into the wine glass.
All righty.
All right. So it's a nice transparent sake, very clear.
Yeah.
And let's give it a smell. This is a Junmai Daiginjo, but this is not our classic Junmai Daiginjo aroma, especially from Kyoto. This has a little bit more funkiness to it in the aroma, doesn't it?
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of, I've definitely had sake in this style before. Actually, I've had sake in this style from Kyoto before. So maybe it's something a little bit regional.
Hmm. Well, there's riciness in the aroma.
Mm-hmm. Riciness, and there's something I can't quite place that I it's driving me crazy. It's like right on the tip of my tongue.
Hmm. Almost earthy, right?
Yeah. It's some kind of earthiness that maybe it'll come to me when we sip it.
All right. So we're still in our wine glass. Mm-hmm. And let's go ahead and give this a taste.
Well, that's nice and clean and dry.
It's very smooth. It has a bit of richness to it.
There is some richness. There's it's mushroom is the thing that I couldn't place.
It's savory. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's umami on the finish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is not the Junmai Daiginjo I was expecting.
No. Yeah. it's got a rich, dry finish, and it's certainly interesting. It's definitely a little bit different than what I come to expect when I have a Junmai Daiginjo. But that's the nice thing about sake is that it can be 10,000 different things.
Yeah. 10,000 ways.
Okay. That was the reference I was making.
Yes. Ban Ryu. So we have our sakazuki, and I'm really curious to taste this savory, a little bit funky Junmai Daiginjo and pour this into the sakazuki. So I'm going to use my small carafe.
I'm going to use my wine glass.
Okay. So I've got a sip in here. Now, the first thing I'm going to try and smell from the sakazuki.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to smell it.
I want to say that putting sake into a platter is not the
open
most
saucer.
It's not the easiest way to express the aroma.
Yeah, I mean it's almost shocking how different the experience is smelling one and the other.
Mm-hmm. Totally, I can't get anything out of this.
Yeah,
aroma wise, like we literally just went in depth about what the aroma was, and I can't get anything now because it's just not being funneled towards me because it's just a function of that glass.
And how are you feeling holding this? Like, I feel
nervous.
Like I mentioned before. Yeah. You have to pay attention.
I feel nervous, Tim.
I'm holding it with two hands.
As am I.
Yeah. And it just, again, it focuses your attention on this cup. So.
Yeah. And like I said, my cup has more depth than yours. So I have a little bit more freedom to... I have a little more literal wiggle room. You're a little more into the gun there, I think.
Yes. All right. Let's give it a taste and All sip right. from our sakazuki.
Weirdly, the flavor is a little bit more pronounced to me.
Yes. I was going to say that too. I think I know what's happening.
All right, please tell me because I have no idea.
Well, when you sip out of this low, flat saucer, it pushes the sake more directly onto your palate.
Mm.
It's the center of gravity is very low here. You're not tipping your head back. You're tipping the cup up.
Yeah.
And it lets the sake hit your palate very directly. But I totally agree with what you said. It's like the flavor is bolder.
It's much more intense.
Right?
I was wondering if maybe because you're not getting any aroma, you're not like braced in any way. It's just like the flavor hits you with nothing else around it. Like when your nose isn't involved at all. It's very unusual. There is definitely a different experience having this out of a different vessel. There's no two ways about it. This is, you know, it's definitely real. Like this is something that is, you know, all we did was change the vessel we're drinking out of, and we're having a very different experience with the exact same sake.
It's so interesting because you would expect that the aroma would be more dispersed in the wide open saucer like sakazuki, but I was not expecting the flavor to be more pronounced from the sakazuki. That is really surprising.
Hmm. So one thing about sakazuki that, for me, when I encounter them and you know, I think on the occasion that I got this cup especially, or on the occasion I got this cup as well, is that oftentimes when I go to a bar that is warming up sake, so if I go to like a kansake bar, they will often pour it into a ceramic sakazuki.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's it has anything to do with wanting to make the aroma less prominent and make it more about the taste hitting you all at once when you warm it up. I'm not sure. But it's definitely something I've encountered quite a few times in Japan, is that when I go someplace that's warming up sake, they will oftentimes use this flatter, wider vessel to drink it out of.
Hmm. So you've seen the sakazuki used for warm sake in Japan?
Yes, I have.
Okay. You know, I have a theory, not 100% sure what each sake place is thinking, but, you know, we've mentioned a few times that the portion of sake is very small.
Yeah.
And if you're really focused on the temperature, pouring a few sips allows you to maintain the temperature for that sip. And then the barkeeper is going to pour you another sip. And it's a way to really control that temperature. It's not sitting in the cup getting cooler as you chit chat.
Tim, that is an excellent point. It sits in the carafe the entire time. You pour a little bit into there. You sip it up. It only holds a little bit, so you're all good.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, and these sakazuki also require interaction between people. Because if you can only sip 1 ounce at a time, you need someone there to pour for you, and you have to pour for them. So it demands that people interact with each other, pour for each other. And I think that is definitely an icebreaker in Japanese society. And having this, probably the smallest of all the vessels we're going to be talking about, 1 ounce at a time, really requires people to focus on the sake, interact with each other, pay attention to the temperature very precisely, pay attention to the sake very precisely. And it's really fun to drink out of.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the things we're going to get out of this series is that comparison experience, is the ability to go in there and explore how different sake is going to taste and how different it's going to smell when we change the vessel up on us. Mm. We've done this one time now, and we've already had a really interesting shift in how we experience this this Matsu no Midori.
There's one other situation when I've seen sakazuki used at home.
At in home? Japan.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there is a New Year's tradition called Otoso. Have you ever heard about that? Otoso?
I have heard of Otoso, but I've never partaken in Otoso.
Otoso is a New Year's sake that is kind of infused with herbs and spices that don't make it more delicious, but they're supposed to bring you good health for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So in traditional Japanese households on New Year's, you are going to drink otoso sake. And very, very often you see it served at home out of these ceremonial sakazuki cups. And that is something that all the members of the family would drink to fortify their health for the year. Mm. And that's another situation where I've seen sakazuki in real life in people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love the idea of you know, sake on New Year's to promote health.
It's just seven, you know, secret herbs and spices. The Colonel's secret recipe, otoso.
Yes, 11 herbs and spices and sake. 11 herbs and sake. There we go. So let's circle back to the sake itself for a moment, and let's talk about food. If you want to have another sip to refresh your opinions on where to go with this.
I'm going to sip out of my sakazuki. As it's getting warmer, the savoriness is really coming out more.
Mm-hmm.
Earthy, mushroomy. Not at all what I expected from a Junmai Daiginjo. Mm-mm. Not at all.
So since this is, you know, not your average Junmai Daiginjo, and it is a lot more savory, it is richer, it has that rich, that earthy, mushroomy note to it. This is going to be much more food friendly than your average Junmai Daiginjo as well, I think.
Yeah, it would pair really well with something savory.
Yeah. Like, I think that you can get away with something a little bit more heavy than your average Daiginjo, because I think a lot of the time those are very light and you don't want anything that's going to interfere. So you go with something really light to go with it. So you have like your sashimi, things like that. That's, you know, light flavors, and to go with light flavors, and you're going to be in a good place. But this can get down a little bit more with when you're adding a little more flavor, a little more umami to your dishes.
Mm-hmm.
A little more autumnal dishes, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Or winter dishes.
And we also have to mention that this would be great served at room temperature or even warm, I think. What do you think about temperature for this?
I agree 100%. I think that this was something that would get along really well with warmth. And, you know, you prove that out a little bit by having that in your sakazuki. Because it's going to warm, you know, a small amount of sake is going to warm up very quickly when it's flattened out like that.
Yes.
A lot of surface area.
Surface area. Yes, that's why you don't want it sitting around in such a small little container. You can take the sip, enjoy it, focus on it, and then do another when you're ready. But I think that the exposure to the air is going to bring this up to room temperature pretty quickly and really focus that savory flavor even more. Really,
yeah.
Really interesting. I think that this is a really unique style of sake. I do want to mention, though, that it's also very, very smooth.
It is. It is. And that's one of the most interesting things about it, I want to say. Because, you know, I've experienced a lot of these flavor profiles before in Yamahais or Kimoto, which
yes.
aren't always the smoothest, because they're trying to be a little bit more, you know, a little more rough and tumble. That may not be the right way to put that, but whatever.
No, that's perfect. Love it.
But this is smooth. It is really, it has those flavor profiles, but it's nice and smooth.
Yeah, it has almost the texture is almost like Junmai Daiginjo texture. Like, it's
right.
A little bit silky and it's very, very smooth. But then the flavor profile is like, yo, I'm umami over here. And it doesn't match up completely in my mind, but I think served warm, it would take it to another level. So next time I open this bottle that we have here, I think I'm going to try to warm it up. And it's still cold outside. It's still the winter time. So I'm going to try this warm next time I open up this bottle.
It sounds like a plan to me.
Wow. Well, This was a fun experiment, I have to say. Sakazuki versus wine glass. And do we want to preview any other vessels coming down the pike, or do we want to keep it a secret?
Well, what are some of your favorites? What do you like to drink out of?
Well, there's the classic Ochoko. You can't go wrong with that. That's
definitely
a classic.
Have one of those
ceramic sake cup. There's a variation called a Guinomi, a little bit larger, more rustic in shape.
I'm looking forward to the Masu.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about Masu a lot on this podcast.
I want to drink my sake out of a box.
Yes. Yeah, so we have some really fun sake cups and shapes coming down the pike. We hope you'll stay tuned to our Wine Glass Smackdown series.
I don't know if that's what we're going to end up calling it. Write in and let us know if you think that if you think that that's the best name. I'm ready. Yeah.
Well, just like there's different styles of sake for different sake lovers, I think there's different vessels for different sake lovers. And this is just such a fun experiment to see how it affects the perception. It's the same sake, but it reads totally different in these two different glasses. So really fun.
And that's really the most the fun part for me. I'm really, you know, I really love that aspect.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to our next sake vessel smackdown. And thanks, John, for sipping with me today. This was a really interesting sake to explore.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Tim. Thank you.
And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We really do hope that you're enjoying our show. If you would like to show your support for Sake Revolution, the best way to support us now is to join our community on Patreon. We're a listener-supported show, and all the support we receive from our patrons allows us to host, edit, and produce a podcast for you each and every week.
And if you want to find out some information about our Patreon, please visit patreon.com/sakerevolution. We really appreciate all of our patrons. Without you guys, there really isn't a show. You can also support us by leaving a review at Apple Podcasts or any other podcast platform of choice. That really drives the needle, gets this podcast into new ears, which is what we're all about here. And of course, you can always just tell some friends, tell some family, push it on them, give them, you know, give them the first one free. And you know how it works.
And as always, to learn more about any of the topics or individual sakes we talked about in this or in any of our episodes, be sure to visit our website, sakerevolution.com. And there you can see the show notes and a written transcript of each and every episode.
And if you want to reach out to us directly, or if you have sake questions that you need answered, we would love to hear from you. Please reach out to us. The email address is feedback@sakerevolution.com. You also have the option of sliding into our DMs over on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. On Instagram, we are Sake Revolution Pod, and we are Sake Revolution everywhere else. So grab your Sakazuki. This is our favorite part of the podcast. Until next time, please remember to keep drinking sake and kanpai.